You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. Welcome to the American Hour. We've got a big show tonight. Paula is not going to be with us tonight. She's had some meetings to go to, so she'll be back with us tomorrow night. Yes, we'll be broadcasting tomorrow night along the same themes that we're going to be talking about tonight, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But we've got a lot to talk about today and tomorrow. We do not have any special guests, and there's a reason for that, because we've got too much to talk about. So the rundown for tonight is this. I'm going to start the show off with some sound bites. We need to go over these sound bites and review things that the president has said in the past, because it's important, and I think it's a good way to start up the show. So here we go with the first one.
I would put our legislative and foreign policy accomplishments in our first 2 years against any president, with the possible exceptions of Johnson, FDR, and Lincoln. But, just in terms of what we've gotten done in modern history.
Wow, so he's saying he's pretty much the best president. Possibly three presidents might be better, but the accomplishments he's achieved. Domestic and foreign policy. Let's see, foreign policy. Yeah, that's going really good with Iran right now, and we've totally given the cold shoulder to Israel and some of our other allies. We're going to be giving missile technology information to Russia against the advice of the Senate and the President. That's a violation of the Constitution. We'll get to the constitutional violations later, but let's listen to that one more time. I know it's hard to listen to.
I would put our legislative and foreign policy accomplishments in our first 2 years against any president.
Okay, I can't take it. Can't take it. Against any president. Yeah, I would too, and you'd come out a loser, except for Jimmy Carter. Wow, what a deluded, arrogant megalomaniac. The guy is just being absolutely ridiculous here. This is what he's going to have to do in his campaign. He's going to have to lie. He's going to have to say, I accomplished this, that, and the other thing. Like, in other words, I turned the economy around. The economy's doing just great, even if it's in the dumper. It doesn't matter what's actually going on. He's going to lie, lie. And as our good friend Michael Cutler always says, if at first you don't succeed, lie, lie again. So there's our first sound bite. And our next one is a good one, because it just goes to show you can't trust this guy at all. He's going to tell us all kinds of things, whether he rewrites history or make promises. And he won't live up to them.
When Congress offers you a bill, do you promise not to use presidential signage to get your way?
Yes. let me just explain for those who are unfamiliar with this issue. We've got a government designed by the founders so that there'd be checks and balances.
About the founders.
You don't want a president who's too powerful, or a Congress who's too powerful, or a court who's too powerful. Everybody's got their own role. Congress's job is to pass legislation. The president can veto it, or he can sign it. But what George Bush has been trying to do as part of his effort to accumulate more power in the presidency is he's been saying, well, I can basically change what Congress passed by attaching a letter saying, I don't agree with this part, or I don't agree with that part. I'm going to choose to interpret it this way or that way. That's not part of his power. But this is part of the whole theory of George Bush, that he can make laws as he's going along. I disagree with that. I taught the Constitution for 10 years. I believe in the Constitution, and I will obey the Constitution of the United States. We're not going to use signing statements as a way of doing an end run around Congress. All right?
He's not going to use signing statements as a way of doing an end run around Congress. Well, let's see now. He's done 20 signing statements, and the most recent one, when the Defense Authorization Bill was signed, He had a multi-page, I don't remember how many pages, it was a very lengthy, basically saying, not just this is how I'm going to interpret it, I'm not going to comply with this, and I'm not going to comply with that. Very bold. One of his, one of his things that isn't even a signing statement, and we're going to get to that a little bit later, is Obama's, you know, we just can't wait for Congress. Remember he said, no end runs around Congress. It's unconstitutional. Oh, yeah, by the way, he taught the Constitution for 10 years. He taught one aspect of the 14th Amendment. He did not teach the Constitution. So there's your other lie right there. But here's what his own press secretary had to say. I'm sorry, the Labor Secretary, Hilda Solis. The president has been clear that where there is gridlock with this Congress, he will act. Well, he doesn't have the authority to. Now, we're going to come back to that. We're going to come back to that. And we're going to go through the Constitution. And I'm going to show you that he has absolutely no authority to do this. And he's violating the rule of law. Not only the Constitution, but the rule of law. But our topic tonight that we're supposed to be talking about, and we'll come back to this stuff here, is class warfare. Class warfare. I'm telling you right now, his class warfare is not going to work. It's already starting to backfire on him, and he's got a long way to go to the election. He's going to have to shift gears, but it's not working. Now, Charles Krauthammer wrote a good article on the 9th of December called Obama's Campaign for Class Resentment. The president has nothing to run on but crude populism. And that's true, because he's said many things when he was campaigning and then gone and violated that, not lived up to it, lied about what he was really going to do. And so he can't run on this record. So what he's got to do is try and get the masses stirred up, but it's not going to work. It's going to backfire on him. So here we go. We're going to take some of the quotes out of Krauthammer's article here. And it's not in any one particular magazine. You can find it in different magazines if you just Google that. But in the first month of his presidency, Barack Obama averred that if in the 3 years he hadn't alleviated the nation's economic pain, he'd be a one-term proposition. In other words, a one-term president. When three-quarters of Americans think the country is on the wrong track, term. Well, you run not on your record or your accomplishments, but you try and create class warfare and get the masses. You take the side of the supposed masses and convince them that they need to reelect you or they're in big trouble. Well, they're in big trouble right now, and they're in bigger trouble because of him. As the philosopher of Zuccotti Park called them, the 1%, Obama, these rich are the ones holding back the 99%. The breathtaking greed of the few is crushing the middle class. If only the rich would pay their fair share, then the middle class would have a chance. But see, they just don't have a chance. You, middle class America, listening to this show, you don't have a chance unless government steps in and breaks the back of the rich. So the crowd member says, gee, where to begin? A country spending twice as much per capita on education as it did in 1970 with zero effect on test scores is not underinvesting in education. It's misinvesting. As for federally directed spending on innovation like Solyndra and ethanol, wow, that's worked really great. And how about the preposterously subsidized at about $250,000 per car flammable Chevy Volt? This is precisely it. You know, we've got $15 trillion in debt, out-of-control entitlements, but we're going to try and stay obsessed with the socket-to-the-rich tax hike that, as Krauthammer says, in this year, at the most, will reduce this year's deficit, not the debt, the deficit, the rate at which we are currently going further into debt, from $1.3 trillion to, get this, $1.22 trillion. Oh, that's really going to make a big change and really make change things for the middle class. So we've got structural problems, and it has nothing to do with the rich. A massive stimulus, a gigantic payoff to democratic interest groups such as teachers and public sector unions will add nearly $1 trillion to national debt. Yeah, that really worked out good. Got sweeping federally run reorganization of health care that's going to cost us a lot of money, and it's not even going to cover everybody. So this warfare, this class warfare, is exactly the same kind of stuff that guys like Hugo Chavez, Fidel Castro used to, and Evo Morales in Bolivia used to draw in the vote of hope. hopefully the masses. But we know that the president's not even going to target white middle-class Americans because he doesn't feel he's going to get anywhere with them, so he's just going to ignore that sector of the population and go after the poor, those on welfare, those on entitlements, et cetera, and convince them they've got to get out and vote. The good news is they typically don't get out and vote that much. So Krauthammer finishes up. He says he can't run on stewardship. He can't run on policy. His signature initiatives, the stimulus, Obamacare, and the failed cap and trade, will go unmentioned in his campaign ads. They absolutely will. Indeed, they will be the stuff of Republican ads. So what's left? Class resentment. And that's precisely what he's going to go after. So we got one more article written by Gary Bauer that was pretty good. And this is precisely what I've been predicting, that this is all going to backfire. Obama spent much of his presidency attacking the rich and berating businesses for not hiring more workers. But businesses aren't hiring because they see an uncertain future with a president who, at best, doesn't understand business and, at worst, is at war with capitalism. Let's see what else he has to say here. You know, he quotes Leon Koopman, CEO of Omega Advisors, a hedge fund manager, who sent Obama a blistering letter. And I think this probably says it best. Capitalism is not the source of our problems as an economy or as a society. As a group, capitalists employ many millions of tax-paying people, pay their salaries, provide them with health care coverage, start new companies, found new industries, create new products, fill store shelves at Christmas, and keep the wheel of commerce and progress, and indeed of government, by generating the income with taxation funds, moving. To frame the debate as one of rich and entitled versus poor and disposed is to both miss the point and further inflame an already incendiary environment. It is also a naked political pander to some of the basest human emotions, a strategy, as history teaches, that never ends well for anyone but totalitarians and anarchists. We've got another CEO here that jumps in, basically says the same thing. But, you know, the bottom line is attacking the rich and those that provide jobs. Now, when I say the rich, I'm not talking about Paris Hilton or somebody that's got millions of dollars. First of all, take somebody who maybe won the lottery or got an inheritance of $50 million. Well, first of all, that inheritance, even though it's been paid on in taxes and taxes when it was earned and invested and everything, they're going to pay taxes on it again. So double, triple, quadruple taxation. Now, let's say they put it in a bank. Maybe just a credit union account, and they're not even getting any interest on it. This president has said money that's just sitting around not being used, we should be able to access. You see where this is leading? It's leading to the government coming after your pension, your 401k, because, hey, it's not really it's just that all that money's sitting there. No, that money's earning me interest such that I can live off of it in retirement. So I guarantee you this is what the government's going to do. If Obama gets reelected, we're going to go after pension funds, pensions, money that's sitting. You might even have a expensive house that you don't owe a mortgage on anymore, that you actually outright own. They're going to come after all of that and say, listen, we're going to take the equity out of your house. We're going to take the pension money, et cetera, but we'll make payments to you or we'll give you IOUs. So you're not going to lose out on interest accruing and look how that's worked for Social Security. So Social Security is absolutely bankrupt. It's full of IOUs. Its unfunded liabilities are in the tens of trillions for those of us that will be retiring anytime in the future. And that's where the government's going to get its next money. Well, first of all, it can't pay off the debt it has. How's it going to pay off you and me when it starts taking our pension plans and our equity, et cetera? That's where they're headed. Okay, so now any of us that have any money at all, and I'm not talking about rich people, millionaires, just any money in savings, et cetera, the government's going to go after, confiscate. This is what you call tyranny, and then they're never going to pay it back. And that's a great answer. Because and of course they can't pay it back. They can't pay back the debt they have now with China and other other countries, as well as investors in the U.S. that have bought treasury bonds, et cetera. They have no way of paying it back. So going after the rich and going after your and my pensions will just fund larger, bigger government like it always has, and the debt will continue to grow. What's the answer? What answer does this president give us on trying to reduce the debt? Zero, zip, not a single thing. So that's why class warfare is not going to work. When people begin to realize that there's no way to pay the money back that this government wants to take from us or already has taken, and that the rich just simply can't pay down the debt we have, can't even cover half or even a small portion of the annual debt, then people are going to realize that's not the answer. It might feel good to make people pay. Rich people pay a little bit more. But now let's talk about the companies. In a speech that he gave today, and it was targeted at Mitt Romney, of course, talking about corporate raiders and corporations that buy out companies, et cetera, let me first say what a company that goes in and tries to help a foundering company is really doing. We're talking about companies that are in bankruptcy. They're going away. They cannot survive. If they could, they would reorganize in bankruptcy and continue on, and many companies have done that. These are the worst of the worst. And these corporations come in and figure out ways to make them solvent and work for the future. Mitt Romney's record on that, and if you know, I'm not supporting Mitt Romney in this primary. I'm a Rick Santorum supporter. But I just want to make it clear. These companies are taking toxic, cancerous companies and fixing them 60, 70% of the time. That was Mitt Romney's record, I believe, 65% of the time they had success. If a company like his, Bain Capital, had not come in, guess what would have happened? They would have just gone away. All of the employees would have lost their jobs, every single one of them. It's like saying to a cancer doctor that, gee, he's not a very good doctor because 30% of his patients die. So saying that Bain Capital, 30% of the companies they took over and tried to help, didn't survive, they were cancerous and toxic to begin with and were not going to survive. Guaranteed, they were already on their way out. Okay, so that is a false, a deceptive presentation and an outright lie of these companies. Now, there may be some companies out there that take advantage, and we've seen that happen in the past. Well, that's part of our capitalist system. We can move to a system like China has, and then nobody has a chance to get ahead. Then we'll all be nice and even. Everybody will be the same. In Cuba, everybody's the same. There's nobody rich unless you're in the government, but there's nobody that's rich. Everybody's just as poor as everybody else. If that's what people want, we can do that real easily, but that's not what Americans want. So it's a lie. It's deceptive. It's class warfare. Now, the second thing is I see all the time, well, he said in his speech today, what we're going to do for companies that outsource jobs, and he had some CEOs behind him. These gentlemen are not outsourcing jobs. They are only hiring Americans. You know who was not there? How about Jeffrey Immelt from GE on his economic council, actually the chairman of his economic council, because he's outsourced more jobs than probably just about any company. Google it. You'll find out that GE was the king of outsourcing, turned outsourcing into an art. But that's who Obama hires to be his chief economic advisor. And so Jeffrey Immelt wasn't there, and, of course, the CEO of Kodak isn't there. He's the king of outsourcing. In just the last, I believe, few years, those two, the CEO of GE and the CEO of Kodak, have outsourced 55,000 jobs to China. Wow. Impressive, huh? But neither of those CEOs were there. So this is a guy who's going to cherry pick what he's done. And, of course, this all goes back to crony capitalism. Companies like GE that are doing exactly the opposite of what the president talks about are going to cozy up to him and, hey, you know, we want to help you out and make you look good, because they're doing exactly what he says he's going to crack down on, but then the president doesn't crack down on them at all. But anyways, let's talk about this idea of taking away tax breaks for companies that outsource. What kind of savings do you think companies that outsource realize when they outsource out of our country? It's not 1%. The kind of tax breaks he's talking about getting rid of might save a company 1% of its bottom line. But the reason these companies outsource is because they can save 20% off their bottom line. They're not paying citizens of the United States unemployment taxes. They're not paying into that. They're not paying for their health care, providing that, and on. Even if they just shove them into Obama's government-run health care cooperatives, they're going to have to pay $2,000 per employee. So hiring people in the U.S. can be very expensive. And I am not for outsourcing in any way. I'm absolutely opposed to it. But this is not the answer, taking away their little teeny tax breaks. That doesn't amount to a thing. So once again, he stands up there and says, we're going to crack down on these companies, when in fact these companies are giving him more money in political donations than any other company. Bain Capital Romney's old firm gave more to Obama than they did to Romney in the last presidential race. So what he's talking about is fluff. It's smoke and mirrors. It's an outright lie. So to say that we're going to crack down on their tax breaks if they outsource, it's not going to stop a thing if it's advantageous to outsource. So what we need to do is figure out ways to make it so it's not advantageous, not by harming the bottom line and profit line of these companies, but creating incentive to stay in the U.S. Taking away a tax break is not incentive. Taking away, eliminating all corporate taxes, now there's incentive. Now, that brings up a great point. But, Tom, if we eliminate all corporate taxes, then all these big fat cat companies are just getting away with murder. I've said it a million times before. There are no corporations in America that pay taxes. Yes, they pay taxes, but they pay it with your, the consumer, money. They don't look at their bottom line and say, what do we need to do to make money, and here's what our pricing structure is, and, oh, now we got to pay taxes on it. No, they figure taxation into it, and that's the price of the product or service that you purchase. Taxation's included. So by taxing corporations, this is an insidious underground way of actually getting at middle class America. Raising corporate taxes only raises taxes essentially and the cost of products for middle class America and Americans purchasing goods and services here at home. It does nothing to slap and make any changes and harm and take away from those rich corporations. In fact, if every corporation is paying a 30% tax rate, let's just say, then that's their part of their bottom line. They're going to then decide how much above their bottom line they need to price their products and services to be competitive. If you take away all corporate taxes, the corporations that are no longer paying those taxes, we'll say 20, 25, 30, whatever we're going to call it, 30%, let's make it 30%, aren't going to keep their product, aren't going to now suddenly have a windfall 30% increase in their profit because one of their competitors is going to drop their prices by 30%, maintain the margin they had before, but drop their prices. And all of a sudden, they're out in the cold. Nobody wants to buy their product or their service because it's 30% cheaper over here. So corporate taxes are not paid by corporations. You've got to understand that. Okay, so that was the lie of the day today, that taxing corporations more or eliminating their tax breaks at the outsource is somehow going to harm them. It doesn't harm them in any way, or so minimally that it won't make a difference. So now let's get back to this quote from the Secretary of Labor saying, the president has been clear that where there is gridlock with Congress, he will act. Now let's just recap here why we're talking about this. Because the president pledged not to use signing statements to end run Congress. Okay, no signing statements. Won't do it. Let's listen to it one more time because we want to hear it come out of his own words. Don't violate the Constitution. Don't go around the Constitution. Don't undermine Congress. But that's what he's doing, and we're going to talk about two specific things that he's done with the jobs bill for students this summer and on immigration.
When Congress offers you a bill, do you promise not to use presidential signage to get your way?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, he said yes.
Let me just explain for those who are unfamiliar with this issue. We've got a government designed by the founders so that there'd be checks and balances. You don't want a president who's too powerful, or a Congress who's too powerful, or a court who's too powerful. Everybody's got their own role. Congress's job is to pass legislation. The president can veto it or he can sign it. But what George Bush has been trying to do as part of his effort to accumulate more power in the presidency is he's been saying, well, I can basically change what Congress passed by attaching a letter saying, I don't agree with this part or I don't agree with that part. I'm going to choose to interpret it this way or that way. That's not part of his power. But this is part of the whole theory of George Bush, that he can make laws as he's going along. I disagree with that. I taught the Constitution for 10 years. I believe in the Constitution, and I will obey the Constitution of the United States. We're not going to use signing statements as a way of doing an end run around Congress. All right?
So did you hear what he just said? He's not going to use signing statements to end run. So that would mean he wouldn't do anything to end run Congress that's unconstitutional. He just made it very clear. He's going to follow the Constitution. And what did he say? Congress writes legislation and passes it. Then the president, what does the president get to do? He gets to sign it or veto it. He doesn't write new legislation. He doesn't add to it. He doesn't take away from it. He simply signs it. That's in his own words, his own words. So let's now go back to the Secretary of Labor. The president has been clear that where there is gridlock, in other words, Congress is not writing or passing legislation, he will act. Well, he's lied to us then. He's lied to us in his campaign that he would not act, that he would follow the Constitution. So what has he done? President Obama's latest We Can't Wait initiative. President Obama announced, this was back on January 6th, his latest job creation initiative. And then I'm going to tell you why it's such a smoke and mirror joke to begin with. The job, summer jobs, the job program was created with two things. The president's desire to invest $1.5 billion on summer and year-round employment for low-income peoples, 16 to 20-something, that didn't come out in this article, and his failure to pass his jobs bill. The failure to pass his jobs bill. Congress didn't pass his jobs bill. So instead of relying on the jobs bill for funding, President Obama will defer to his trademark We Can't Wait strategy and bypass congressional authority. Today's announcement, remember, Richard Nixon, part of the impeachment of Richard Nixon was that he had taken money that Congress had allocated to a program and was going to spend it in a different way. And there was money left over, though. He spent it the way Congress said, but then there was money left over. And they wanted to impeach him also on the grounds, not of the other part with Watergate, but also because he then used money in a way that was not approved by Congress. So what's Obama doing here? I mean, so we're talking impeachment of a president, and now we've got another president doing the same thing that Nixon did, that the libtards absolutely hated, but now it's A-OK. Oh, let's do it. Today's announcement is the latest in a series of executive actions the administration is taking to strengthen the economy and move the country forward because we can't wait for Congress to act. That was a White House statement. We can't wait for Congress to act. Can't wait. We're going to get to the Constitution right now and see where the clause is that says when the president can't wait, he gets to take action. Okay, the other one is the president saying we can't wait on immigration. Now, this is right off of Politico 44, a living diary of the Obama presidency. Yes, an ode to the president, the liar-in-chief, the deceiver-in-chief, the socialist and Marxist-in-chief, but they're in love with him. So here's what it says. The president is making another bold against Congress today, this time using his executive power. Okay, now we're going to – his executive power. We're going to look at his executive power. This is an outright lie by the liberal left. His executive power to make changes to an immigration rule, changes to law, law. Okay? The changes would allow illegal immigrants whose spouses or children are legal U.S. residents to apply for a waiver from some penalties while they seek legal status. That's we're not even going to talk about the issue. We're just going to talk about this his constitutional power, according to this libtard rag that we're talking about. The rule would – okay, that talks more about it. Let's see. So he's making changes. Okay, so they don't go any more details about this. Now, here's the interesting thing. I want to read you some of the comments of people, some of the morons out there that think that it's great that the president does what they want. Just wait until we have a president does something they don't want. So here we go. Here's the first one. Yes, it's about time you take this fight to the Republicans. Well, they're not the only ones in Congress. With the elections and the Hispanic vote at risk, let's see if the GOP will have the guts to fight back on this brilliant, common sense, and humane immigration policy. I'm so glad, not the next person, I'm so glad the president is taking a stand on immigration. It's about time. Next person. Well, I'm going to come back to this one. Bravo, Mr. President. About time you stop playing nice with these moron Republicans. Yeah. Next guy. Obama is officially kicking some butt. We waited long enough for this to happen. Here we go. An aggressive President Obama. Me likes. Yeah. You moron. You idiot. Then another guy just goes, oh, boy, it's hard to read this stuff. The American Hispanics are a growing voting bloc that will determine. Wait a minute. Hispanics are a growing voting bloc. Yeah. Americans of Hispanic heritage. Moron. All Americans can vote. But okay, we're now going to talk race, okay? Oh no, it's politically incorrect to say that, you know, blacks do more of this than that, or Hispanics do more of this than that. But now, oh, Hispanics are growing. No, Americans of Hispanic heritage, sure. But what's that got to do with voting? That will determine who the next president will be. Well, I can tell you this, moron. This is Lauro M. Rodriguez. Yeah, I'm calling him out. Lauro M. Rodriguez, you moron. Hispanics historically turn out in very, very low numbers. Registered voters that are Hispanic turn out in extremely low numbers, way below the demographic for other groups. And I'm not going to define other groups because I'm tired of this separating of colors and separating of backgrounds. We're all Americans, you idiot. Witness the growing number of Juan Crow laws that affect American Hispanics. There is not one, and this guy's an absolute moron, there is not one law in any state or in the federal government that changes the way an American of Hispanic heritage can vote versus an American of Chinese heritage. So, look, they always come up with these false choices. I'll tell you what, you know, the growing number of anti-white American voting laws, the ones that make Americans that are white stay home and not allowed to vote, that's got to be changed. There you go. There's my false choice. How about that? Take that one, you moron. Okay. Then we got this one guy, Bruce Henson. Doesn't sound Hispanic to me, right? The only two comments that disagree with this common sense approach happen to come from old white people. Apparently he didn't look at mine. Tom Garcia. Yeah, old white people. But let's see what Dolores had to say. I'm so glad that, no, not Dolores. She's an idiot. One, there is such a thing as law in the United States. Everyone knows that except our president. And last time I checked, there is a proper procedure. And there was one other lady that commented. But let's take a look at the Constitution, because these morons, these libtards, think that the president can just, I'm glad for an aggressive president. Well, you know what? Hey, I want an aggressive, how about an aggressive scout leader over here lives near me. I want him to say no to illegal immigration. Well, what's a scoutmaster got to do with that? Well, what's the president got to do with it? Neither of them have any authority. So let's take a look at it. Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution tells us what the president can do. And I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, but let's do it. He's commander-in-chief. Okay, that doesn't have anything to do with immigration or creating jobs for high school students. Oh, and by the way, the jobs bill for the kids this summer, $1.5 billion. I don't know where the money's going. 90% of these jobs, which he fails to tell us, but that's what's in his little bill, is for non-paid jobs, internships, non-paid jobs. So I don't know where the $1.5 billion is going. I guess it's going to employers say, hey, if you'll hire one of these kids, we'll give you some money, but you don't have to pay the kid. That's great for the economy, isn't it? I don't mind kids working and doing summer jobs, and I, you know, told my kids, get out there and do something and learn some skills, et cetera, and you may have to do that for free. But no, we don't need to spend $1.5 billion for kids to do that. Just tell your kids, get out there, go do a job. If you get paid, great. If not, get some experience. Why do we need to spend $1.5 billion? Because the $1.5 billion is going to go to his crony capitalist buddies to help him raise money. See, this is what you do. I'd like to raise $1 billion for my campaign, but I don't have $1 billion to put in it. But if I'm in the government and control where money goes, I make sure it goes to the right people so that billion ends up coming back to me in campaign donations and ads that are paid for, et cetera, and that kind of thing. So that's the jobs deal with the kids. They're not even going to get paid. So I don't know where the $1.5 billion is going, but it's probably crony capitalism at its best. What else can the president do? He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each executive department. So he can ask a question. What's next? He can grant reprieves and pardons and offenses for offenses against the United States. Okay? Reprieves, pardons, that has nothing to do with jobs bill for kids and has nothing to do with immigration. For offenses against the United States, except in the cases of impeachment. He shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties. Okay? There's no treaty being made there, and certainly not with the advice and consent of the Senate. He can nominate for, you know, judges and ambassadors and that kind of stuff. Let's see, what else can he do? Not much. The president shall have the power to fill up all vacancies that may occur during a recess of Senate. And we saw that happen, but there was no recess, so there's a violation of the Constitution as well. He shall from time to time give Congress information on the State of the Union. He can either deliver a speech or he can write it out and just send it over to him. Delivering a speech, giving a speech is not writing your own bill to create jobs and not changing immigration laws. So far, I haven't seen anything, folks, that says the president gets to change laws if Congress won't act. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses. Okay, that doesn't have anything to do with it. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. No. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. In other words, make sure the laws are executed properly. Well, let's see. No jobs bill is passed. He can't wait. So he's going to execute it, although it was not passed. So that would not be faithfully executing a law that never passed. And on illegal immigration, we have laws. But he's not faithfully executing it. He's changing them. That's the end of the president's power. Nowhere in there does it say. Now, it doesn't matter to libtards. They don't care what the Constitution says. Well, they'll just say to me, well, Tom, gee, it's the Constitution. There's a failure there of the Constitution. Okay, I tell you what. Let's let him do this stuff. And then he doesn't get elected in the next election. And whoever the Republican candidate will say, we'll just say a Republican candidate comes along and gets elected. And then that Republican candidate says, I'm going to make some changes to immigration law without the Congress. And I'm going to outlaw abortion without Congress. And I'm going to, give states the authority to implement, religions of their own. And on and on and on. All the things that the libtards would hate. Well, what are you going to do? You can't say, oh, look, the Constitution doesn't allow you to do that, because you're allowing this president to do that. What is going to stop a Republican president from doing the things that you don't want to see happen? What's going to stop him? That's what we call the rule of law. The Constitution is the rule of law. This president is violating it repeatedly, and he tells us he will follow it, and then he doesn't follow it. He said it. We heard him say it. Don't go around Congress. He made it very clear. Congress writes legislation, and then I simply sign it or veto it. And yet we have two examples here where he has now created legislation because, quote, he can't wait on Congress. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you have the power, Mr. President, to write legislation if Congress is too slow or doesn't want to do what you want to do. Just as the president said in his little tutorial before, there's a thing called the rule of law and a separation of powers. You can't have a president that's too powerful. Well, we've got a president now that just does whatever he wants if he thinks it needs to get done. So there you have it, the unconstitutional, violating the rule of law, liar president that we have. Wonderful. So one of the articles that I pulled up, not that one, but another one from the American Dictator, the real sleeping giant, a new Gallup poll suggests Obama's class warfare, and this goes back to what we were talking to earlier, so I'll use this to finish up with. Obama's class warfare becoming a big loser for the left. And this came out just this last December. Written by Ross Kaminsky, came out in the American Spectator. But during the heady days of the 2009 protests against the support of Obama and big government in general, many people spoke of the rise of the Tea Party movement as a result of the presidents Obama and Bush having woken the sleeping giant of pro-liberty America. But that giant may turn out to be a pygmy when compared to what Obama, Reed, and Occupy Wall Street have woken their incessant and intensifying class warfare. Americans who consider themselves Tea Partiers are a minority of this country, even if a significant and motivated one. The real majority, one which Democrats are foolishly antagonizing, are those of us who refuse to accept the left's claims that Americans of one economic class are the enemy of those of another economic class. To be clear, the polls show that Americans view their own position as haves, not have-nots, and that position has been remarkably stable. The percentage of Americans who believe that the nation is divided along those lines has plunged since the last similar poll done just prior to Obama's election in 2008. So we talk about, the meltdown of Wall Street and the toxic derivatives and everything else. Like, the mess was far more a failure of government than of markets, something which one might think would be difficult for the American people to learn, especially since politicians of both parties have a lot to answer for when it comes to pushing affordable housing, a.k.a. vote buying on the nation. But Obama has given the nation a tremendous object lesson by posing the federal government as the solution to all problems. And he said, remember, right after he took office, he said, this is a problem that only government can solve. Wow, he's done a great job. Unemployment's up, much higher than when he took office. Yes, it's dipped a little bit, but it went all the way up to 10%. He said, let me spend the stimulus money. It won't go over 8. It hit 10. When the president said that spending trillions of dollars, well, that's what I just said right there. Even if the voters don't think about it explicitly, if the Obama administration's claims about government fixing the economy are so obviously false, then just perhaps the other charges made about evil capitalists being the source of all evil may also be false. At least they're worth skepticism, and thus the public has become skeptical. Good article continues on and talks about more. Well, here we go. While a majority of Americans along those lines, a majority of Democrats do buy into the class warfare rhetoric. 58% of Democrats say we are split between the haves and have-nots. Well, look, first of all, yeah, there's always somebody that's got more than me, and there's always somebody that's got less than me. Jeez Louise, but what I don't want is government trying to take control of everything and then fix it, because what has it ever fixed? Nothing. Nothing. So, that's going to be the end of the show. I hope we've cleared that up about class warfare. We've had a nice discussion about the constitutionality of what the president's been doing, especially after he said he would obey the Constitution and not end-run Congress, and that's precisely what he's doing. So he's a liar. He's an outright liar. And I'll play a couple more clips, and we'll call it a night.
And that's why today I'm pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office.
Well, he's doubled down on it. The deficit at the year before Obama took office was $400 billion. It's now over $1 trillion each year. So he's it's at $1.2 trillion. So he's tripled it. Pledged to cut it in half. That would have made it $200 billion. It's now $1.2 trillion. Okay? And, of course,
we will not rest until we reach a day when not one single veteran falls into homelessness. I will not rest until the dream of health care reform is finally achieved in the United States of America. We will not rest until we are succeeding in generating the jobs that this economy needs. I will not rest until businesses are investing again.
Well, businesses aren't investing again. Unemployment's still high, and on. So, but, you know, he plays golf every weekend, so I guess maybe that's not resting. Maybe he's talking shop on the golf course, but... You know, and then, of course, there's his statement on...
I think we can get a lot of work done fast. When I met with the governors, all of them have projects that are shovel-ready. We've got shovel-ready projects all across the country. Shovel-ready projects, rebuilding our roads, our bridges. We are seeing shovels hit the ground. Shovels are breaking ground. There are almost 100 shovel-ready transportation projects already approved in Colorado, which are beginning to create jobs.
So all those statements about shovel-ready and it's working and it's going just great. It's going great. All these shovel-ready jobs that he talked about, except it turned out it wasn't true. So the deceiver-in-chief pulled a good one on us, except then he even admits, and here we go.
Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected. Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected.
Wow, and it's funny, too. Everybody's laughing about it. Ha, 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 ha. So he told us and promised us. Shovel ready, shovel ready, shovel ready. Now they don't use that term anymore, but then he even admitted, not as shovel ready as we thought. Ha, and it's all a big joke. So there you have it, the deceiver-in-chief who will tell us anything he needs to get reelected. Can we afford 4 more years of this guy? Absolutely not. This guy has been a disaster, will continue to be a disaster for this country, and who knows how far he can take this, but he's proven some tremendous resilience in destroying the United States of America. Well, thanks for joining us tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night, 7 p.m., same bat station, same bat channel. And Paula will be with us. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.